Any spirit who returns asking you to lay down the brightest ornament of your manhood at their behest, you may be very sure is mistaken with regard to your highest and best good. I can only answer from my own standpoint of experience, but I have looked this matter fairly in the face, and have made it a subject of earnest investigation, and I can come to only this conclusion, that the reason which we have in human life is the oracle that stands between our God and ourselves, always pointing the way. We should heed it, and however much we may receive the advice of others, we should never appropriate it except it is in accordance with our highest reason. Do you understand? Question. I quite understand what you say, though it has failed to remove my difficulty. In this case, I see no particular reasons either for or against. But if perfectly certain the spirit was advising me to do what it knew to be right, I should follow it. I have no other evidence to guide me. Answer. Then I should say, by all means, remain just where you are till your evidence is sufficient to lead you. This was at page 201. By Joshua Albury, a Jew rabbi, June 2, 1868. Question. Can you tell us what has become of the ancient seers and sages? Can they communicate with us, or are they so far away that they cannot return here? Answer. The ancient seers and sages are often in your midst, communicating the thoughts which they have gathered during their experience in spirit life. They have by no means passed beyond the boundary that divides them from their old, earthly home. On the contrary, they are within Earth's sphere, and are constantly lending their intellectual life for the benefit of those who remain on the earth. Question. Then it is possible that they can come directly and speak to us, personally, is it? Answer. They certainly can, and certainly do. Question. Have you ever communicated personally with the Spirit of Jesus? Answer. I certainly have. Not with the idol of the Christian Church, but with the meek and lowly Nazarene, who came out from the darkness of the church and sought to give a new light to the people then dwelling on the earth. He shed his light, and religious darkness crucified him. He was humble in his circumstances, in his human aspirations. He was not at all what the Christian world suppose him to be, and he returns to earth today, just as much a stranger unto those who profess to know him best, as he was in the days in which he lived in the body. Question. Is not this the second coming of Christ, in a spiritual signification? Answer. It certainly is. Question. Not in a literal, but in a spiritual sense, I mean. Answer. In both a literal and spiritual sense. That which is literal is so unlike what you suppose, that you cannot recognize it. Your church declares that its Savior shall appear in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory, with many attendant angels, with more than the glory that an earthly king could command, with all the pomp that attends earthly sovereigns. Oh, shame! Shame! The truth of itself is grand enough without outward show. Wisdom needeth not to be exalted of her children. She will exalt herself. Question. Who ordered Moses to go out against the Midianites and avenge the children of Israel? Answer. Not the infinite Jehovah, whose love is equal to his wisdom, but the darkness of the times, the superstition of the age. Question. Did not some ancient spirit represent himself as the one God, accommodating himself to the superstition of the people? Answer. The ancient church was in the habit of consulting with the spirits of the dead, and in their ignorance they believed, or the common people did, that these familiar spirits were none other than the Lord, the Jehovah. When Moses consulted with departed spirits, he returned to the people with a "Thus saith the Lord." But he should have returned with a "Thus saith the Spirit with whom I have been communicating." It is very possible that the Spirit might have been lower in morality than Moses, far beneath him intellectually, but death, to an unenlightened mind, clothes intelligence with superior wisdom, but to an enlightened mind, death takes nothing from the soul and adds nothing to it. Question. Then are the ancients very much in advance of the moderns in development? Answer. By no means. Question. They have had the benefit of development in the spirit world, and we in the material? Answer. Yes, and the two generally keep pace together. Question. May not this age be very properly considered the dawn of the millennium? Answer. It certainly is. Question. Is it not already inaugurated? Answer. To me it is. Question. And within a very short time, too? Answer. Yes. By D. Star King, June 8, 1868. Question. Have spirits power to foresee events, and if so, whence do they gain that power? Answer. That they have the power to foresee events has been perfectly demonstrated many, many times. The old adage that a coming events cast their shadows before, is very true. It is these shadows that the disembodied spirit perceives, and judges concerning the objective form which will take place in the earth life. Every idea that is out fully in the earth life, gathers to itself a large, long train of circumstances which are unseen to you, but not so to disembodied intelligences, and whoso is able to add together all these unseen circumstances, is able to give you a correct answer concerning the issue upon all points, from the smallest to the very largest. Question. Do not many attempt to prophesy who are not competent? Answer. Certainly, many persons suppose they have solved a problem correctly, but it is one thing to suppose you have done a thing just right, and quite another thing to do it just right. But the failure of one individual does not detract from the power of another. By no means. This was at page 204. Question. Whence comes the material that forms the spirit hands so frequently seen in the presence of mediums? Answer. From the atmosphere, or from what is contained in the atmosphere, focalized and condensed through mediumistic life. Question. Is it made from elementary compounds? Answer. It is. You are well aware, or you should be, that the atmosphere contains the elements of which all forms are made. Every conceivable form that finds expression on the earth may be found in the elements of the atmosphere peculiar to the earth. Question. I have seen H. Melville Fay perform quite a number of tricks, if we may so term them, with the Davenport brothers. He says he is exposing them. Do you think he is a medium? Answer. I certainly do. Nay, more than that, I know that he is. I know also that he is given to trickery, and will bear a very large amount of criticism. Question. Then you think that spirits would assist him in his trickery? Answer. I certainly do. Question. Then spirits do, at times, assist in deception? Answer. Why should they not? There are spirits disembodied who are upon the same plane with himself, and from them you should expect similar mental conditions. They would do what he would do. They stand no higher, no lower. They are ready to assist him in all that is possible. Mediumship, or spirit manifestations, are by no means dependent upon any high moral law. They belong to nature, and nature sometimes gives very crude manifestations, while again she gives us very lovely ones. Question. Were not the Davenport brothers good mediums at first? Answer. And so they are now. Question. Do you think it is a benefit to spiritualism to allow fate to go on? Answer. It certainly does not harm spiritualism. It cannot. Question. Does it not in the estimation of the people? Answer. No, not even in the estimation of its opponents. Spiritualism, as a natural science, cannot be harmed by the trickery of one, two, or 1,000 individuals. All these persons who practice trickery under the name of spiritualism, do but excite the populace to investigate, to know what is true and what is false. That which they would use against spiritualism the great God throws into the scale and uses for it. Question. Are spirits in the other world subject to impressions of the elements as are we? Do they experience, night and day, the benefits of the sun and sea? Answer. They do, not in the same sense that you do, but in a similar sense. They have their seasons of rest and of intense activity. Question. More so than in this world? Answer. No, perhaps not. Question. Do they read time as we do? Answer. Oh, no. There is no time in the spirit world, not such as is recognized by you. Question. Do they not reckon by minutes and hours, as we do? Answer. Nothing of the kind. Time, if it is measured at all, is measured by events. Question. How do they regulate their hours of rest? Answer. By their needs. The spirit rests when it has need of rest. Question. Then there must be a limit to their power? Answer. Certainly. This was at page 206. By Theodore Parker, June 10, 1868. Question. Is there anyone on the earth who can teach and truly explain the mystery of godliness? If so, I would thankfully ask the spirits to proclaim the name of the person, through the medium, that the world may be blessed. Answer. They who teach and continually preach of the mystery of godliness may be found among the little children of earth. I know of nothing in all the forms of mind and matter that preaches so eloquently of God as the little child, and would you be godly, learn of them. They will never lead you astray. Question. How, and for what purpose, are spirit lights produced? Answer. Through electrical effusions, and they are produced to satisfy inquiring minds concerning the power of disembodied spirits. They are focalized by means of the power that is drawn from the medium's body, and they are ignited by the same power. They are capable of burning in your atmosphere till that power is exhausted, and no longer. By John Pierpont, June 23, 1868. Question. Is there any property system in the spirit world analogous to the one we have on earth, as respects landed, personal, or monetary property? Answer. The law of mine and thine, so far as universal nature is concerned, has an existence only on the earth, and I, for one, thank God for it. Whatever the soul has absolute need of, in the spirit land, that it has, and no more. It cannot hoard up treasures in that kingdom of the hereafter. It cannot gather to itself any more than it can make use of, but all that it can make use of, for its own good and the good of its fellows, that it will always find. Landholders, such as we find on earth, will lose their occupation in the spirit land. Those who find their heaven in the sphere of real estate will step out of heaven when death visits them. And I would advise all such to change their sphere while here, for so sure as they do not, terrible remorse and dissatisfaction of spirit will be sure to overtake them. Question. Do not the laws of nature, justice, and harmony, guarantee to everyone a free use of all the natural elements, such as sunlight, atmosphere, water, and earth, in such quantities only as are needed for actual use? And do they not forbid all monopoly of the same? Answer. Why, certainly. The gifts of God are free to all. The sun shines upon the criminal and the pious man alike. There is no difference. The water is just as pure to the sinner as to the saint. Flowers bloom in the bad man's garden as in the good man's. Question. Why should the earth be monopolized by a few, at the expense of the many, when the water, air, and sunshine are free to all? Answer. According to higher wisdom there should be no monopoly, and when the soul has entered the sphere of the higher wisdom there will be none. It is only because you dwell in darkness. You are ignorant of the better way, that you choose that one. Question. Cannot mankind be taught a better system for the distribution of the soil, in equitable shares to all, so that each and all may have home and plenty, instead of, as now, the two vicious extremes of excessive wealth and extreme poverty? Answer. Yes, they can be taught in this direction, but it will be by slow degrees. They have been a long time learning to accumulate. The spirit of greed has been too long a household guest. It is one of the idols, and when it is demolished there will come weeping and wailing because of its death. But by slow degrees the soul will be taught to understand that all that it gathers to itself that it cannot use, will be a drug in heaven's market. Now, remember that, every one of you. If you have a dollar more than you know what to do with, get rid of it just as quick as you can. Question. Could not human laws be brought up to harmonize with the natural Lord Divine, in guaranteeing this equitable distribution of land, in shares proportioned to population? And would not this do more than any other thing to abolish poverty, degradation, and crime from society, and to establish justice, plenty, harmony, and happiness among men? Answer. Yes, but as I before said, it can only be done by slow degrees. There can be no sudden overturn in this direction. It must be brought about by a slow, even process of development. It cannot by any possibility be brought about, to stand upon a firm basis, in any other way by Joseph Löwenthal, June 29, 1868. Question. Have spirits the power to visit other planets? Answer. They certainly have. Question. And do they? Answer. They do. Question. And return to this planet? Answer. They do. Question. Are the intelligences there informed like those of this? This was at page 209. Answer. Many of them, we are told, are very well informed. Some are in advance, in many points, of the children of Earth. Upon some planets the arts and sciences are many steps in advance of what you have here. It would be very egotistical to suppose, in the present state of intelligence, that this small Earth were the only one of the celestial bodies that was peopled by beings who were intelligent, who had passed out of the babyhood of the race and entered the manhood and womanhood of it. Question. In visiting other planets, have spirits the same ability to enter the external sphere of the planet as they have of the Earth sphere? Answer. I have been told that they meet with many difficulties in such expeditions, but that they are all successfully overcome by the persevering. By Theodore Parker, June 30, 1868. Question. When the spirit leaves the body, if very pure, does it not ascend to a high altitude above the atmosphere, and live in the element called electricity? If the spirit is gross or unprogressed, is it not obliged to remain on or near the earth until it has become purified? Answer. It is not necessary that the soul should pass out of the atmosphere of the earth in order to dwell in the highest state of heaven. The atmosphere which belongs particularly to the soul may be found everywhere. There is no special place set apart for it. It has an existence wherever there is harmony. Whenever and wherever the soul is happy, when it rests in a state of contentment and peace, then it is in that rarefied atmosphere which you call by the term heaven. It is not necessary that the soul should rise, pass beyond the earthly atmosphere, to one 210 more rarefied and electrical as belonging to human things. You ask our apartment to confound the conditions which belong to mind and those which belong to matter, that it is almost impossible to make you understand that heaven, or the atmosphere in which the soul lives, is not a locality. It can be here, it can be millions of miles away, it can be everywhere. It is a mistaken idea that there is a land where the soul gravitates after death, 60, 70, 100 or more miles out of Earth's atmosphere. This is reasoning from an entirely material standpoint, and the soul takes no part in it whatever. Question. You say the soul has always existed as an individual entity, that is, it existed in embryo prior to conception. Is not that the case with all organizing life germs, whether vegetable or animal? Answer. Yes, I so believe. Question. It has of late been asserted by the intelligence controlling that the motive power controlling the body acts outside of the body, and controls and guides it as the musician does his instrument. If that is the case, why have we been told differently, that the spirit existed within the body, and left it at death? Again, if the spirit exists outside of the body, where did it come from? Did it emanate from the body, or did it exist as an entity prior to the existence of the body? Answer. Both statements are equally correct. Allow me to illustrate. There is a life principle within the flower, and that life principle exists beyond the externally seen boundaries of the flower. It is not confined entirely to the inner, but goes beyond the material boundaries of the flower, is attached to the form, belongs to the form. Some spirits exercise their power upon their machine, the human body, from the external to the internal, while others exercise their power from the internal to the external. Some work from within to the without, others the reverse. There are no two souls playing upon these human instruments exactly alike. Everyone varies. It may seem to the outside observer that the musical performer always acts from the external to the internal, but that is a mistake. So far as your external senses are able to perceive, he does, but there are senses that go beyond them. I know of many musical performers who perform from the internal to the external, even in the crude things of this life. It is common, and you can do no other way than to measure all by your human senses, and whatever cannot be measured by them you cannot understand. The soul eludes this power. You cannot grasp it. You cannot throw it in the scales of your human senses, there to be weighed. You cannot bring it within the scope of your analytical understanding, there to be analyzed. You cannot kill it, it escapes death. It is a subtle intelligence that predominates over all things. I believe it has ever had an existence, and ever will. As a controlling spirit, I surround this subject, and I act from the external to the internal. I possess myself of all the faculties of her being, but I do so from the external. A certain part of my life becomes absorbed, but it is a very small part. There are other spirits who become largely absorbed, so much so that they are obliged to act from the internal to the external. That is because the law of the life of the subject has a stronger controlling power than the external foreign spirits has. I stand upon the outside and draw out the forces, while others are attracted to the inner and throw out the forces. The sun sheds his rays upon the earth, and calls out from her glorious storehouse, but a certain portion of the sun's rays are absorbed by the earth. Study from nature's great volume. It is open, it is free, and whoso would make it his own must study earnestly for himself. Question. Is the difference we see in the natural ability or minds of men to be attributed wholly to organization and circumstances, or is the more soul, spirit, or mind element in some than others from the beginning? Answer. The soul, when expressing itself through earthly conditions, is obliged to conform to the law of earthly conditions, and as all earthly subjects, or human bodies, vary in character and in being, so the expression of no two souls can be precisely alike. And as all bodies are differently constituted, so are all souls. There is a law by which souls are aggregated, as there is a law by which bodies are aggregated. Certain spiritual atoms compose the soul, as certain material atoms compose the body. All souls are compounded differently. The component parts of my soul differ from yours. And so it is throughout the vast chain of eternal life. But the life a principle, the eternal all-pervading essence, I believe to be the same in the Bushman and the Hottentot as in the Anglo-Saxon. Question. It is said by media that clairvoyance is to be attributed to the peculiar organization of the clairvoyant. Will you tell us how it differs from that of the non-clairvoyant? Anatomists do not seem to find any. And if the cause is not in the organization, what is it? Answer. Some souls have the power, from time to time, to gain the ascendancy over matter, overcoming its laws, overreaching its boundaries. These souls are able to perceive things beyond the boundaries of time or the present. They are able to extend their perception into the past and the future, as into the immediate present. These are called clairvoyants, seers, persons gifted with second or abnormal sight. I do not know that these persons possess a different material organization from all other persons. I believe that the faculty or power of clairvoyance rests more with the spirit than with the body. I believe it is a spiritual rather than a material gift. By Theodore Parker, September 2, 1868. Controlling Spirit, in answer to a question which has been propounded to us at this place, but has not been answered, a selection will be read by the author, who has been absent from the body of flesh some 14 years, hoping that it will answer the needs of that sorrowing spirit, and assist her to think in the right direction. The question is this: is it right for me, or for anyone, to seek to obtain a permanent home on earth? She further adds, I have all my life sought for it, but in vain, and I have come to think that it is not right for me to seek longer for a home on earth. Still I am in doubt. O angels, give me light. The better land. For here have we no continuing city, but we seek one to come. Hip. 13. 14. No city here. No constant habitation wherein to lay our throbbing hearts and fears, no city here, where sorrow and vexation can enter not, and bring their weight of cares, no home of rest, where change can enter never, no home which time can crumble not away, no love wrought ties that death can fail to sever, no spot where darkness follows not the day. This was at page 214. We trust in friendship. Like the tossing ocean, the waves of time can soon deface the spell. We trust in love, a word, a look, or motion, can bear away the dreams we love so well. We trust in fame, and find it but a bubble, whose tints, when grasped, fade silently away. We trust in wealth, 'tis on a sea of trouble, it taketh wings and fleeth in a day. We have no home, no region free from sorrow, a poor, houseless wanderers in a desert drear, and no place to call our own, no sweet tomorrow, where pleasure comes unsullied by a tear. No home? No home? On drooping pinion weary, like the lone dove that wandered from the ark, must we roam on, still sad, unblessed, and dreary, without a hope, a daybeam in the dark? Ah, no. Ah, no. From heaven's own broad expansion a spirit whispers, through the shadowy blue, the Father has full many a spacious mansion, there is a home, a happy home for you, a home where death and time can never enter, it stands uncrumbled by the flight of years, a stream of bliss is glittering in its center, 'tis God's own city, unalloyed by tears. There, in that home, no throb of deep dejection can check the gladness of the joyful heart. But sweetly bound in God's own true affection, nothing can rend those clinging ties apart. We have no home on earth, but sadly driven adown time's stream, where sorrow leaves a trace. Hope on, sad soul, there is a home in heaven, a constant, firm, and sure abiding place. Let us not mourn, though life may brine us sorrow, soon can we cast aside the cumbrous clay. We have a hope, a glorious help tomorrow, a home in heaven, a home of constant day. We have no home on earth, then let us sever our thoughts from earth and its alluring love, and list the angel's voice, that whispereth ever, there is a home of constancy above. By Theodore Parker, September 8, 1868. Question. Andrew Jackson Davis says, Ao, never allow any soul to pass out of the physical body through the agony of feathers or cotton, either beneath or in folds about the sufferer. Why does it cause them agony? Answer. Feathers possess a large amount of animal magnetism, and that magnetism sustains the relation between the spirit and the body, sometimes for hours after it would otherwise have taken its departure. With regard to cotton, we are told that the excess of vegetable magnetism produces similar results. Knowing this to be true, remove all such obstacles from those persons who are fluttering between the two worlds, whose anxious spirits are only kept in misery here by ignorance. By Theodore Parker, September 10, 1868. Question. Why do coming events cast their shadows before? For instance, the writer lately met with a disaster, previous to which he kept telling his friends that something disastrous was going to happen, and it did. Can it be accounted for? This was at page 216. Answer.